Chuck, welcome to Branson.
Hi, Chuck.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for having me. It's great to be here with you.
It's our pleasure.
Well, we haven't decided whether it's our pleasure or not.
I'm sure.
We don't even know anything about him yet.
No, we don't know anything.
You know, the way we do our interviews, buddy, we find out about our people first, then the book and how you did. So right off the bat, Keith's got some questions for you, Chuck.
Well, Chuck, want to find out where you were born and grew up and a little bit about the early years for you.
I was born in Pittsburgh, PA, and lived there for a while. Then my father and my family moved out. My father went to work for Penn State here in State College, PA, and I went to high school, college here, and then a couple of years after that, I left for Fuller Seminary in California.
Where in California?
Pasadena.
Oh, yeah.
Basically Los Angeles.
Yeah. I grew up in the San Fernando Valley, so not very far from Pasadena. Well, Chuck, and after college, what did you do?
I was going to jump into something before you got there.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You're going too fast.
Hang on a second, Chuck.
I think I've seen Chuck's picture in the whiteout at Penn State.
Do you think so?
I think I've seen him right in the middle of the crowd in a whiteout.
Ah.
Chuck Mason sitting right there.
If you look real close.
Man, when it joined the Big Ten, I said, how's this going to work? And it's been a great addition to the Big Ten. And what adversity they've gone through at Penn State. But, boy, they have some strong football programs. Now, I'm going to name you a little town in Pennsylvania you probably don't know very well. It's not the state, Keith. Okay. It's Indiana.
Really?
Indiana, PA. Do you know it, Chuck?
Huh.
I do. I know where Indiana is. And, in fact, I was deer hunting on a farm in Indiana this fall. So I know exactly what you're talking about.
Hmm.
Yeah, pretty neat, huh?
Yeah, that's good. Cool.
Well, how do I talk to my kids about social injustice? Social justice and not injustice.
Not social injustice.
Yeah, I was talking about injustice, too.
Oh, my goodness. Chuck, how did this book come about?
Well, the most direct route is I've got two teenage sons and who are making their way through high school. My oldest one just graduated. My youngest one's still in. But I was watching the social justice narratives really having an effect with them and really pulling their minds in a direction I absolutely didn't want them to go. So, like many parents, I pushed back and I reacted and tried to, you know, react like most parents do. And I had to stop for a second and say, I've got to begin to take a different track with this. So I went back and used all my training that I received at Fuller and all the culture work that I do to this point, and I just put it into work with them. And it had an incredible effect pulling them back home. And so I put it all down in a book and for other parents and to help parents who are fighting the same battle.
Chuck, I got to tell you something. Not only do the kids need it, we need it. We're so indoctrinated by the world. We've got to figure a way to come back. And you, critical race theory, Keith?
Yeah.
You don't have enough letters here. Yeah. LGBTQ and all the others. Come on, where's that? And the cancel culture. It's just inundating us in the media. We're not inundated in the United States, Keith.
Right.
We've used this example before, Chuck. Help us.
Well, so let's return back to your point about parents and adults needing help. And even if you don't have kids, the book will really help you because I use it to break down like the big picture of what's happening in culture. And the strategies I use with my kids, you can use anywhere. You could take those same strategies to your school board meetings. You could take them to wherever you work. You can use them when you're talking to your family members. So if people are saying to themselves, hey, what do we do about culture? Where do I start? How do I understand what all of this is? Get a copy of the book. And it's not just for parents. It's not just for kids. It'll help anybody who has questions.
Well, let's open the book up a little bit. Give us a couple of golden nuggets out of it, because I think the first thing as a parent or now as a grandpa, you know, you just say, oh, come on, cut it out. You know better than that. And that's not the way to approach it, I'm sure. So in a second, I'd like you to kind of open the book up a little bit for us.
And, Chuck, let's start in the order you want to, but I'll give you the three. My co-host, I try to help him. My co-host is blind, and I love to help him like this. Keith, take your hand. Take a look at this book.
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
good size.
Right here.
Yep, not huge.
And this is how to talk to my kids. I'm reading it upside down. Social justice. And give me your finger right here. Critical race theory right here is a circle.
Uh-huh.
LGBTQ.
Uh-huh.
Okay. In the cancel culture right there.
Oh.
So you want to start with critical race theory?
Sure. I can start there if you'd like.
Let's go.
Okay. So the basics of what happened with critical race theory is you have the black community in America lags behind the white community every year when it comes to major measures of success, things like education, your annual salary, negative aspects like policing, interactions with policing, higher levels of incarceration. And the question we ask ourselves is why? It's a legitimate question. We want to know why, because we that's not good for the black community, it's not good for America, and we want to see them thrive to every level they can. Well, there were Harvard intellectuals who looked at this problem, and they decided to interpret through a lens of Marxist theory. And they said the reason why the black community lags behind the white community is because of systemic persistent racism that was built into America from its founding. So we are white, we have white supremacy because we do better every year because we set a system up that benefits us and disadvantages and exploits the black community. And so that's the theory that's being taught within schools today, and they're excluding any other interpretation. But the issue is, when you take a look at American culture, and you take a look at, let's take SAT scores every year, there's a whole lot of evidence that points it in a completely different direction. And actually backs up what God's Word has to say. And here's the issue. There are other non-white communities in America that do better than the white community on SAT scores every year. One is first generation Asian immigrant kids. Mm-hmm. Now their parents don't have any education, often don't speak English. They come and they're living in inner city environments, the same where the black community is, and these kids go to inner city schools. But parents have intact families. They prize education, discipline, studying, home structure. And these kids that are involved in this family structure outperform the white America every year. Also, the West African immigrants, the black West African immigrants come, same thing. Family structure, living within inner cities, and they excel even above the Asian and white communities every year. So what you end up doing is taking statistics like these, and I looked at my boys and said, if it's all about systemic oppression, it's all about white supremacy that's built into America, why do these two disadvantaged communities outperform us when they're living within inner city communities? Doesn't that show how important family is and how important it is to live by God's word to make sure that you stay married and that you raise your kids with the structure they need? And it's those kinds of questions that actually make a huge difference.
I'm going to tell you, I love the way that you're approaching this, because if we hear one more off-the-wall racial accusation, Keith, we understand slavery, we understand how bad it was, it's over, but yet we see people that just want to keep that race flame alive, Keith, rather than approaching it like Chuck has done here and say, listen to these facts.
Yeah, those facts we don't hear on the mainstream media, or it's not something that even in our schools, Chuck, people are talking about. I think that that's the key, probably, and this book is going to help to do that, is to get that out.
It does, and that's the reason why I went the route that I did. Most Christian parents can talk about, from Galatians, that there's neither Jew nor free, male nor female, that we don't see race within the kingdom. And yes, there have been the abuses in the past, but they don't have access to the statistics. They don't have access to taking a very different route. So what I wanted to do in the book was give parents a different tool set than they wouldn't have had coming through the church, and give them this different approach with statistics they probably never would have encountered or thought to use on their own. And then there's a ton within the chapter on critical race theory. Take the same approach when it comes to LGBTQ, in particular the transgender agenda. And parents have found it incredibly helpful. People have found it incredibly helpful.
I want to go back and look at something that you've said in the critical race theory. And by the way, Keith, thanks to the author and to the publisher. We have a book, and somebody's going to really enjoy this. Tell them how to get it.
You could call 417-334-5532. That phone number again is 417-334-5532. Tell Darren your name and your phone number and say, I'd sure like to have Chuck's book.
Right out of State College, Pennsylvania, for you Big Ten fans and love to watch Penn State and those groups. That's exactly where our author's roots are out of, right there in Pennsylvania. But I want to stay here for just a minute. He talked about family. I want to go back to you and I for a minute, Keith, to our families.
Right.
Off to school and back home, I had a mom and a dad,
yep,
and a family structure all of my life.
Yep.
I don't know what it was like to have a separated family. I do now as a father. I understand that with children,
sure,
but I didn't understand it for myself. How important is it, Keith, for that solid structure, mom, dad, discipline, sitting at the kitchen table?
Well, I think it's huge. And, you know, there's some statistics out, Chuck, and you probably know the number. When you have family dinners, when all the kids and everybody's sitting at the table several times a week together, it improves the whole situation, and the kids do better, and the whole family does better.
100%. And the statistics that are coming out today about the importance of the intact family, and most importantly, having a father in the presence of a child's life, are off the charts different between what happens with kids who don't have that structure versus kids that do. And I would say that so much of what we're experiencing as a culture is completely from the breakdown of the family. One of the things that's really optimistic about what's happening in the broader culture today is you're going to hear a term emerging. It's called father absence. This is the way they are phrasing it today. And there are people talking at this point in time that they're going to approach the concept of father absence from a national health perspective to say that this is just as bad as cigarette smoking was to individuals who smoked and the general population because what how it drove up health costs and what it did to health insurance. They're going to start approaching father absence by saying, look, this is tearing society apart. And we hope that they're going to be able to get this information out and move this back in the direction it needs to go. Because if you listen to black intellectuals like Thomas Sowell or Wilfred Riley or others, they'll tell you that the breakdown of the family, so much is coming back to that. 100%. That's, you know, God gave family in Eden before the church and the word. That's how important family structure is for all of humanity. And we have to really recapture and protect that as much as we can.
Now, Chuck, I realize that some of the Rotten Tomatoes could be headed their way towards Branson radio station right now, targeted at me when I say this, because I understand the culture, Keith. And I watch my younger family members who has a fifth grader or a fourth grader in school, and I watch, and when I say to them, there has been times, Keith, that I've said to the daughter-in-laws, tell me about your day, especially to the ones that are working, Keith.
Yeah.
And when they start off, sometimes 5 o'clock in the morning, Keith.
Oh, yeah.
For the kids are up and off to school, then off to work, and then back, and then dad's schedule. For me to say, you know what, every night, like I used to do, at 5:30, we'd sit down at the kitchen table.
Mm-hmm.
I think my daughter-in-law and kids would look and say, we don't even know where 5:30 is. But our culture has changed, and there is McNuggets, and there's Wendy's, and there's all the fast food. It just doesn't happen the same way, Chuck. But can it, Chuck?
Well, you hit on such a fantastic point. And the work, like I have, my website is Battleground Ideas because we're in a war of ideas. I have seminars that I do on there that I do with churches about why kids are leaving church. 60% of our kids are walking away from God when they get out of the home. And it's because in our Christian homes, we're not spending time together, we're not relating to each other, and we're not praying in the home. We're not doing Bible study in the home. And even though we have intact families, that family structure that you and I grew up in is, and pastors and churches need to begin to talk about how critically important it is that we're not all together just under the same roof, but we're tied together in emotionally connected relationship, communicating to each other. That's one of the most important points that I make in the book, which is all of the methods that I have, they don't work if you don't have good connected relationship with your kids where they can trust you to have difficult conversations, and the only way you build that is by getting together, is by having relationship with them, spending time together on a consistent, regular basis. And without that, everything absolutely breaks down.
Let me go backwards just a little bit, Keith, and I want to brag on my wife for just a second. And we've got kids that are 49 and 46 and 44, and all the grandchildren underneath that from 23 down to a great-grandson. But every morning, Keith, before school, Mary would get up, fix a nice breakfast, sit at the table with them. So forget the supper time. We at least get the breakfast table.
Right.
And have a Bible reading time before I went to work. I was not always with them, but she was always with the kids in the morning. So that's a good place we could start. Would you agree, Chuck, that we could at least start at the morning time?
Absolutely. 100%. And if you, however you can corral these kids into talking with them, listening to them, praying with them, and reading God's word with them on a daily or every other day basis, however you can find that relationship time, you absolutely have to do it. And that's really where one of the biggest breakdowns that we're seeing in the church. I was writing an article last night, and I came across some stats that were really, really kind of amazing, which is most Christians, going back to even the World War II generation when they were kids, haven't really done a lot of prayer and haven't done a lot of Bible study within homes when we were growing up in America. But in homes like yours, where you did that with your children, when you look to see where your kids are, where these kids who were involved in prayer and Bible study and really connected families, they thrive. They absolutely thrive. And we absolutely need to be doing it.
Chuck, you put on the front cover, so it must be important, and it is, in the culture, that LGBTQ situation and transgender stuff. We hear it all the time. How do you approach that in the book?
Well, it's very similar to what I did with critical race theory, meaning I break down what is basically the ideological position, and I show people how that works. And then I show people how to use it against itself with another series of questions. And these questions were actually I relay the conversation that I had with my oldest son, or my youngest son was present at the time, when he was in high school, my oldest, the conversation I had about the LGBTQ, about the transgender ideology. And he'll tell you to this day, I can always look at him now that he's on the track, and I can look at him like, you remember that conversation? He'll roll his eyes. Yeah. You know, so these things are really important. And essentially what I did was the transgender ideology relies on a kind of theory of what's called social conditioning. They rejected God's word. And they say gender, race, or personality has nothing to do with birth or biology or us being created in uniquely. But it's about, we're blank slates. So society creates a concept of gender. Whatever that concept may be, that imprints upon us, society makes this concept and it imprints upon us as we live. And that's where gender comes from. So I looked at my sons and I said, okay, well, all right, let's accept that for a second. Let's say, and of course my oldest was saying, well, I've got a friend, a guy in school, and he's a girl. And I'm like, well, let's not go there. So I said, let's do this. I'll agree that your friend is a girl. Let's just go with what you say, that it's social conditioning. It's based upon what he feels and desires. And I said, well, if that's the case, if I want to identify as being black, can I identify as being black? And he's like, well, no, you can't do that. And I said, well, if he can identify as a girl, I can identify as black. And they didn't like that very much. And I said, well, how about then I'll identify as being a woman? Because I said, so now I'm a black woman. And because I do a lot of physical work every day, when I wake up, I have a lot of pain. I said, so I'm going to identify as being disabled. Because if none of this is tied to your body or genetics or anything along those lines, and if it's all about what you feel and what you think and what you want, that's what I feel, think, and want. I said, so what's to stop me from going to Penn State University and looking for a job and showing up and saying, I identify as a disabled black female. And they were aghast. And I'm like, you can't do that. And I'm like, oh, yes, I can. You set the rules. And I said, this conversation isn't going anywhere until you give me an answer. Of course, he couldn't. But then we talked about this is the same reason why people consider that they're animals, the furries. And I said, how would you feel if your son said, I identify as a frog, and then you were forced by society to raise him as a frog?
You know what, Chuck? You are so spot on.
That's a great conversation.
Because that's exactly where we're at. And I read an article the other day. It was a guy in prison. And he was a white gentleman. And he wanted to declare himself as black and a Muslim and a gay. Now, he's got a problem with that because the Muslims wouldn't take you there anyway. But the point is,
right. Mm-hmm.
The society has made it so normal. But it's not normal. It's abnormal.
Absolutely.
Well, you're absolutely right. And one of the points that I make in the book is we have people, so much of our country is not going into, they're not in church. They rejected Christianity as the moral compass for America, and they're forging their own way and creating a new culture that is based upon beliefs and principles and values that are very much antithetical to the church. So this is what you're seeing. You're seeing people use these really crazy principles, and they're saying, we're going to reinvent society the way that we want it. And people shouldn't just downplay it. This is a significant move. So, and it does seem very crazy to us, but it's unsustainable. And one of the best ways we can challenge this is to show people through questions with the data why it is false, why it's not true, and why it's unsustainable, rather than raging about the things that we are frustrated and angry about. It's a longer route to get there, but once people begin to analyze this and you present it as a question, it really has a tremendous impact. And it's one way, especially when you're dealing with family members, coworkers, and your kids, where you really don't want to get involved in heated arguments over the disagreements.
Well, Chuck, Mason, you and Keith and I are on the same page. Can you stay with us past 8? Got some more questions for you.
Absolutely, I can.
Well, we're going to get into cancel culture, but I want to ask you a question, and I don't want you to answer till after 8 o'clock. And then you can tell me, and Keith loves it if you say I'm wrong. He'd love that anyway if you do that. But instead of Nebraska, we're going to use Penn State this time.
Because I'm a Nebraska fan, is why he's saying that.
But we're going to go to Penn State, and I can see it. I've watched it so many, many times, Keith, these ball games. And it's a whiteout at Penn State. So here's what I want to do. I want to look at the whole stadium, and I think they're 80 or 90,000 plus. Mm-hmm. And it's all whited out, and we're having a great football game. But yet we're going to look up in the corner, and we see a bunch of black shirts. In fact, we see a little section up in the top, and we find out that that's the section of LGBTQ, critical race thinkers, and all of that. And I think the picture is, wait a minute, the whole United States doesn't think about it like this. Look how small the percentage is. And I want you to tell me if I'm right or I'm wrong, Keith.
Well, Chuck, that question on the other side of the break, but I'm going to ask you one you can tell me now. What is your website, and how can we follow you?
Well, my website is called Battleground Ideas. The web address is www.battlegroundideas.com. I gave it that name because we are in a battle of ideas for the heart of our nation. And you can purchase the book through there. The book is also on Amazon, and it's on Barnes & Noble. You can get the book through the website, and I have a host of articles specifically for the church and for the greater culture, really to help equip people to fight this culture war, to understand all these complex ideas, to give people the tools they need to be able to make a difference. So you can find me there, and you can also email me, which, hey, if you've heard this and you've got questions or would like to talk, just send me an email through the site. Would love to hear from everybody.
All right, battlegroundideas.com. We're going to continue. Good Morning Ozarks. Chuck's going to stay with us. We'd love to invite you to do the same at Life FM.
Young gentleman with us today, Chuck Mason. He couldn't say, I'm not going to be a Pitt fan. I'm going to go to Penn. We're going to move from the other side of the state. But I'm going to get a little culture war myself. I'm going to California.
Yeah.
Out to Fuller.
Pasadena. What a great city right there in that area. And how long were you in Pasadena, Chuck?
Well, the whole degree took me about 3 years, but it was a bit of a process. I went for a couple and then ran out of money. And decided I didn't want to take out student loans. So I took I got involved in the construction industry for about 6 years in Denver, Colorado, and enjoyed every minute out there. And, God blessed me to be able to pay for the rest of the degree. Came back to Fuller and finished. I lasted about a little over a year and then came back to Pennsylvania.
Good job.
And yeah.
What part of the construction industry were you in?
I was in residential construction. I was I became a licensed contractor in Denver, Colorado, and I also was a construction manager. Residential townhome projects. So I had my own company and managed other big projects. But then living in Colorado.
Well,
playing in the mountains.
Charlie was the developer. He's the guy that looks at the land and goes, "Oh, I see 50 condos on that land." Yeah.
Water, streets, sewer, and I've lost more money building houses than most people ever make. But you know what? Just so many conversations we could have. I learned about change orders, Keith.
Mm-hmm.
I used to use.
We got to try.
Oh, come on. I used to learn this lesson. I said, can you change it from a fake fireplace to a masonry? No problem.
Yeah, no problem.
In fact, instead of that steel door that you've got there, can I put a carved wood one? No problem.
No problem.
Then we go to close, and I took all the no problems, and I said, okay, fireplace, door, and all that, that's $6,000 extra. And the guy, whoa,
you didn't say that.
You said there was no problem.
It is no problem.
So
you just paid me.
I had to learn a lesson. Can you put it in the fireplace? Yes, I can. And I'll tell you what, that's $4,000 extra. We like the fireplace that's there.
Yeah, we like the one
that's there. Does that sound familiar at all, buddy?
Oh, absolutely, it does. And you got to, tracking those change orders and communicating was the key to success or the lack thereof. So,
I like that.
Critical.
All right, help me here. Am I wrong on the stadium? Would there be a lot more black shirts than I think? Or is that how America is? We've got this little majority in the black shirts that are sitting up in the stadium represent LGBTQ and all the others, and the rest of all that white out and pin, that's America, that's traditional America, family, moral values of some type. Am I right or wrong?
Well, you're right, but the black shirts are growing. And one of the points that I make in the book, and with a church, Christians have to come to terms with this. We've withdrawn from culture for the longest time, and to our really shame, we didn't even know who was running for our school boards. We've never been involved in those kinds of elections. We've just figured everybody else would take care of it. Well, these young radicals have gotten into our schools, and they are and our schools and universities are creating young ideological Marxists. So the numbers are growing. It's hard to estimate just what percentage. But one of the things that is happening in America is over 30% of Americans are now, they're what they call the nuns. They're not going to church, and they have no religious center. And so what they're doing is, that's 30% of America, they are looking for a new spiritual paradigm to guide them. We all need that. Even if we say, I don't believe in God, God created us to worship. He created us in His image. So we're going to look for spiritual guidance. That's why people are turning to Marxism, and that's why people are embracing these ideas today. And that's why they're gaining a lot of social currency. What the church needs to recognize is we have to get back involved. And the best place to start is your school districts.
Let me ask you.
Go ahead.
Let me ask you a question, Keith, because he just pointed out a tremendous point. Chuck Mason's our guest today. The book is How Do I Talk to My Kids About Social Justice. It just hit me when he was talking to me. So let's go to that Penn State Stadium. And for you that have seen, it's a big stadium. It's like Michigan and Nebraska and others. And I got the black shirts, right, Keith?
Well, you've got them in a little corner, but if that stadium's 90,000 people and he says 30%, that's bigger than just one little section.
So let me ask you this question. What if I put gray shirts on people that were indifferent? Black shirts were radical. Gray shirts were indifferent. What would my stadium capacity be?
Well, 90,000 people. Yeah, Chuck, how about that?
All right, let me give you some statistics. This is in the article that I'm writing. Okay. Gallup came out with a poll that only 31%, this was last summer, only 31% of Americans have been in a religious service within the last 7 days. And those 31%, they're not in Bible-believing churches. They are. It could be any religious service. It could be Christian Science. It could be Universal Unitarian Fellowship. All of those. And when you take a look at Pew Research, only 9% of people who self-identify as being Christian hold a biblical worldview. 9%.
Yeah, we've heard that statistic, and it's alarming.
It is terribly alarming. I would say that there are far more gray, indifferent shirts in that stadium than there would be white shirts. So those people who are still holding on to a very biblically influenced traditional American worldview.
Oh, that is a great picture. Now, Keith and I aren't the sharpest knives in the drawer. Elevator didn't go all the way to the top. The lights on, but we're not always home. We want you to do us a favor in the next 5 or 10 minutes, and we'll save cancel culture for another day because this is more important. Because Keith needs this. I probably already know all this stuff, but Keith needs this.
Yeah,
would you do us a favor? Would you give us Marxist 101 and 201 so we get a real grasp when we hear people talk about Marxism? Would you kind of?
What are they talking about?
Please.
Okay, and this is critical for people to understand because this is becoming the moral lens for people in America who have walked away from the church. So what Marx did was Marx says, first of all, there is no God. And so if there is no God, how do we explain what we see around us in the world, particularly the suffering and the differences in outcomes? Jeff Bezos has more money than he could even count, or Elon Musk, and then you have people in, you know, inner cities that are mired in poverty. How do we deal? How do we explain that? How do we explain it? What do we do about it? Well, Marx said it was because when people set up society, you know, especially when people first came to America, people had the ability to advantage themselves. They could exploit others, they could oppress others, they could marginalize others so that they would do better at somebody else's expense. When you do that repeatedly enough throughout society, throughout the generations, all of a sudden you've built a society in which certain people rise to the top, other people are stuck at the bottom. And that's intentional because the people that rise at the top want to make sure they stay there, and they don't care if it's at somebody's expense. Marx said that that's actually a form of genocide, that we are killing the people at the bottom. And the only way that we could solve this is to come in and take control of society, radically reorganize society, to take the excess from the people at the top, distribute it to the people at the bottom, so that we all have an equal outcome, which is called equity today. And so what they're doing here in America, like they've attempted in within the Soviet Union or within China, is they are doing their best on every level to end free markets, to end personal freedom, and to push forward all of these social programs that bring us this equality of outcome. And in those other countries, they had gotten all the firearms, and they were able to put in concentration camps, and they liquidated tens of millions of people who got in the way. Currently in America, they're not able to do that. But as they keep indoctrinating our kids with this lens in school, we have kids that are coming out who say, look, America is corrupt. And I want people, and I'm going to end with this, I want people to recognize this. When the October 7th massacre that Hamas did on Israel happened, the reaction within the universities, this quote-unquote anti-Semitism that they want Israel, they look at Hamas as the oppressed, as ones who are being oppressed. This is the lens of Marxism, because Israel is a capitalist, Western, exploitative society who is getting what it deserved at the hands of the oppressed, which was Hamas. That's coming through our university system. This is a critical time for us here in America.
And not only our university system, but also in our culture and many other areas. Didn't I hear that the actors and actresses on the award show last night had the Palestinian pin on nearly to 100%?
Absolutely. Absolutely. What's occurring is, so this is a point that I'm making and what I made in the book, was when people step away from God, when they step away from a Christian worldview and a biblical worldview and biblical influences, they have a moral vacuum. We need a system that tells us right from wrong. That's what God had given us in our hearts. Now, they're adopting Marxism that flips everything upside down, but people who are in that vacuum, they need something and they don't care. But what you have happening in all these areas of society that are trying to deconstruct America, this is their new moral center, and it's hip and it's cool. And so, yeah, the people that you would expect, you know, would be Hollywood, who are using this today, and it's taking off throughout America. And I keep maintaining, as we'd said, you know, some people are not involved in church. They have turned away from God. They're looking for something for guidance, and this is where they're turning.
So let's look at Israel. They're set up exactly how God wanted it to be. Let's go back to Balaam that I talked about the other day when the king said, let's go curse them. And God said to the prophet Balaam, you can't curse them. They are blessed. Right, Keith? Well, let me tell you, your Marxism example to me was excellent. And for some reason, I just thought that I heard some of that the other day on Thursday at the State of the Union, speaking to multi-billionaires, and we're going to tax the tar out of you. And we're going to let it trickle down. No, he didn't use trickle down because he didn't want to use that Ronald Reagan term.
No.
We'll take a quick break. We're going to come back and finish with our new friend, Chuck Mason, from the great state of Pennsylvania, from Philadelphia to Pittsburgh to Penn State. I keep saying, you know there's a name for that, don't you? State College.
Yes.
Right there.
You'll be all right.
Yeah, they're not going to beat Nebraska this year, Keith.
No, probably not.
And Purdue's probably not going to play them.
Hey, we'll be back in a moment. Chuck, stay with us right after this. We'll get back and wrap up with you.
Chuck Mason, our guest this morning, our new friend from the Pennsylvania area. How do I talk to my kids about social justice? Our last time, if you'd like a copy of the book, 417-334-5532. Keith, find out about cancel culture.
Yeah, cancel culture is all around us. And Chuck, let's wrap up this conversation this morning and, of course, continue to tell us where we can find out all about you and your book and what have you on your website.
You can find out more about me, and you can purchase a copy of the book at www.battlegroundideas.com, all one word. We are in a battle of ideas. It's really a war of ideas for the heart of our nation. You can find a lot more resources there to help you understand and help you to fight the culture war. You can send me an email. Would love to hear from you. If you've got questions, concerns, whatever, take a second to reach out. It's always great to be able to talk and to help anybody any way I can.
Well, we don't need to give in to cancel culture either, do we?
No, we don't. And I like to say to people, we're in the position we're in, because let's be honest, as Christians, we have really said to ourselves, well, I mean, we're preaching the gospel here in America. Our nation was founded on biblical principles. It was founded on God's word, you can't fail. You know, God isn't going to let, you know, he's going to let America go. But if you retreat from a culture, if you retreat from a culture war, then you create a vacuum. These ideas fill in. So it isn't the war we've lost. It isn't we fought our best fight and here we are. It's where we're at because we really haven't fought. You know, we've pretty much gone to work, gone to church, and come home. And as I said, we haven't even known who was running for our school boards, who was going to be teaching our children. And I think once we get back and start to engage, the middle of America is just recognizing that this is going too far. But they need leadership. They need people to step up and to step out and to say, we're going to fight it, and here's how we do, and we're going to show you the way. And if we do that, we will be successful.
Well, it is imperative that we get out and we get involved, and I have mentioned that oftentimes. You know, you can vote for the top of the ticket and what have you, but that school board is very, very important, and we should get, and we've got one coming up, so get involved, and now's a good time to start.
Chuck, we like to on our program just kind of wrap up kind of a little popcorn stuff. It's been great today. You've written a great book. It's full of information for our listeners, and we really appreciate your time today.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a fantastic conversation. I really enjoyed it, and thank you so much for helping to, you know, help not only get the word out about the book, but to let people know the resources that are out there to really help them and understand and then engage this fight, because it's complex. We need all the help we can get. There's no doubt about it.
We're going to put a link on our KLFCradio.com website to your website, and they can follow you and find out all that good stuff you've been talking about.
You know, Keith and I are a lot smarter than we act, okay? But we love...
Speak for yourself,
Keith Wasabi. Hey, but having these lessons about Marxism, we hear it, but let's understand what you just said. Hey, the bottom is that you want to give from the rich, give to the poor, wipe everything else out in the middle. I see that, Keith, all the time.
All the time.
Chuck, are you a sports fan at all?
Well, you know, yeah, I am. More and more, I think I follow sports more than I watch
it. I like that.
I grew up in Pittsburgh. I was actually in Three Rivers Stadium during the 70s dynasty, Steeler dynasty. So I'm a huge Pittsburgh sports fan. But, you know, sports is kind of mirroring culture these days. And it's... Like I said, I follow what happens with the teams. I don't spend a whole lot of time watching.
Now, the Steelers, are they still in the NFL, or are they in a junior program?
Well, I'll tell you what. Steelers fans aren't too happy with the team right now. Actually, they signed Russell Wilson.
I'm on
this tangent. We're speechless right now. So.
Now hang on. I have a different tack for you. Okay.
Go ahead.
I think that Tomlin will take him and make Pittsburgh Steelers a great team this year. And I want you to do me a favor. Go back, look up Russell Wilson, Super Bowl FCA talk 2 years ago, and listen to his testimony.
He's a Christian, and I understand that. You know, with sports, you can be a believer, but you better.
Oh, you know who he's talking about? So. He's talking about the San Francisco 49ers, Purdy. He was a great. How'd that work out for him?
Yeah.
Hey, so this has been great, Chuck. I'm going to have the producer stay up with you. If you don't mind, we'd like to have you back again.
That'd be wonderful. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I've enjoyed every moment of it. And I want to say thank you to both of you for having the courage to put this on and to say, hey, the church needs to know about this. And we're going to step up, because I can't tell you how important shows like yours are when you tackle the important issues head on. And I want to thank you both for it. I really do.
Well, Chuck, let me tell you something. We made so many mistakes over our last 25 years. We just put them on and let the Lord take it where it might be. So, Chuck Mason, and by the way, my name's Charlie, of course. I'm not a Chuck. How in the world do you put up with that name, Keith?
That's what he probably has been known by. You haven't. So there you go.
So are you a Charles, or are you a literal Chuck?
I'm basically a literal Chuck, but next time around, I'll tell you there's a long family history that goes with that. So you would get a chuckle out of it.
Well, okay, so, we'll do it again. So Darren will get a hold of you. You'll be back in Branson, Missouri, even though you're from Pennsylvania. So in the Big Ten, come on, let's talk about who is the best team in the Big Ten, Keith.
Nebraska.
Oh my goodness,
we're going to win it all, Chuck, this year. Might as well not even show up. God. We're going to win it all.
You know, fans die hard. That's
I'm talking basketball, Keith. It's the Purdue Boilermakers.
Oh, my
God.
God
bless you, buddy.
Hey, Chuck, thank you so much for being with us, and thanks for writing the book.
Hey, thank you both. God bless you both, too. Looking forward to talking with
you. Nice job.
All right. Bye-bye. God.